Psalm 3 speaks about when things go from bad to worse. Interesting psalm written by David. O Lord, how my adversaries have increased. Many are rising against me. Many are saying of my soul, there is no deliverance for him in God. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the one who lifts up my head. I was crying to the Lord with my voice, and he answered me from his holy mountain. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustains me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people who have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for you have smitten all of my enemies on the cheek. You have shattered the teeth of the wicked. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing be upon your people. Well, I guess you could probably take what David called his adversaries and apply that to all kinds of things. This could apply to perhaps loss of a job, downsizing of an industry, buyouts being offered, budget cuts in schools, foreclosures, the highest rate that anybody has seen for a long time. Equity in your home going down. Some people getting rich on the price of oil while we all suffer and pay the price. Got all kinds of immorality, unethical behavior. These are all things that war against the righteous. Not that the righteous are perfect, but, you know, they notice it more because they are righteous before the Lord. He made them that way. They didn't get a righteousness from themselves. But all these things, I think, could be lumped into this idea of adversaries. We aren't the only ones who have had to deal with this sort of thing. The Pilgrims, on July 22nd, 1620, left Holland for Southampton, England. And there they joined another group of English separatists. And on August 5th, 1620, the Mayflower, with 80 passengers, and the Speedwell, with about 40 passengers, set sail. But the Speedwell began to leak, and the ships turned back for repairs. After a second attempt, the Speedwell was declared unseaworthy. Boy, that's a rough thing to have happen. A lot of work goes into the building those ships. So on September 1620, the Mayflower set out once again for Virginia, carrying 102 passengers and 30 crew. Crowded together on the 90-foot ship, they endured all kinds of cramped conditions, rough weather, sickness, shortage of food. One of the accounts says not all of the 102 passengers on the two-month voyage were Christians. However, some had other religious reasons for going to America, but the Pilgrims provided the leadership for this group, composed of what they called strangers and saints. Interesting. November 11, 1620, after 66 days at sea, Pilgrims sighted land and anchored at the tip of Cape Cod, Massachusetts, that is, far north of the land of Virginia, northern Virginia even, that they were originally granted as a place to land and as a place to settle. On the cold, rocky shores of what would become New England, the Pilgrims, and I quote from William Bradford's journal, fell upon their knees and blessed the God of heaven who had brought them over this vast and furious ocean, end of quote. November 11 through December 20, 1620. For 36 days, they remained at Cape Cod. Pretty cold up there, as I recall. Here, the 41 men, both pilgrims and strangers, wrote the Mayflower Compact. It was needed to prevent rebellion and anarchy in the new land, and the men signed the binding contract and established for themselves a government that promised equal rights and elections. December 21, just 4 days before Christmas, 1620, after signing the Mayflower Compact, a scouting team had searched for a place to settle. They discovered Plymouth Harbor on the western side of Cape Cod Bay. It included good harbor, rivers, fresh water, fields cleared for planting. And they saw no sign of the dreaded natives, but all was not well. While all survived the journey across the Atlantic, disease ravaged the small community, weakened by the cold weather and the hardships of the stormy journey. Half of the travelers, 51 out of 103, not exactly half, died soon after arrival. Day after day, graves were dug, and families mourned the loss of their fathers, mothers, and precious children. January through March 1621, at first the pilgrims continued to live in the stuffy, windowless dormitories, as they called them, of the Mayflower. In spite of the cold, wet winds, men built simple houses for their families, as well as a common house that stored tools and provided shelter for the homeless, kind of a big barn. But each Sunday, the pilgrims would sing the psalms and hear sermons by William Brewster. What about the soldiers at Valley Forge, to go on, or the soldiers who were engaged in the war between the states, or even the people around as the war between the states went on? How about the Southerners who watched Sherman march to the sea and just burn down everything in his path? Then, to move a little closer to our time, what about the Great Depression? How about people in Sudan or other places where people are being oppressed all the time, not just once in a while? We all watch the towers and watch them not only burn but collapse. Well, David dealt with that kind of stuff back here in Psalm 3. The details in the psalm of going bad, from bad to worse, adversaries increased. 2 Samuel 15:12 says, and the conspiracy was strong, for the people continually increased with Absalom. This is about that situation from the not really the subtitle, but the title that's part of the text. This is a psalm of David when he fled from Absalom, his son. Many are rising up against me, David wrote. David's army was decreasing at the same time. They taunt and even speak of God in terms that are unflattering. That would certainly bother a righteous man, to say the least. They think he is such a loser. David is looked at as being a loser at this point in his life. There's a time frame where it looks like not even God would deliver him. In his history, that is. This is about that time frame when Absalom turned against him, against David, and took over David's reign. It's a really interesting story, but it's a tragic story at the same time of how all that came about. It's one thing to have all this come to you without being in any way to blame, but when you have had a hand in causing the situation in life that David definitely had a hand in and faced as a situation in life, it makes it even worse. If David had perhaps done what he should have done and dealt with the rape of his daughter, maybe Absalom wouldn't have thought he had to handle it. And it was from there that things went from bad to worse. David actually started the ball rolling one night on a rooftop, as you recall. Nathan told David that the sword would never depart from his own house because of that major misstep, that sin. The flight of David in face of Absalom trying to rid the earth of his father is described in 2 Samuel 15 through 18. Absalom rebelled against his father, which was in turn Absalom rebelling against God, for David was the chosen one, the leader. But Absalom rebelled against his father, gathered together a number of the disaffected in the kingdom, and under the pretense of performing a vow which he had made, obtained permission to go to Hebron, having given instructions to his followers to meet him there, and having made arrangements also to be proclaimed king there. Subversive, to say the least. So artful had he been, so numerous were his followers, so extensive seemed to be the defection, and David so little prepared to meet it that the only prospect of safety for David was to run. With a few attendants, David left Jerusalem, passed over the Mount of Olives to seek a place of refuge. This was to him, the great trial of his life. For there's no, I don't know if there is no greater trial, but this is a huge trial. The ingratitude of a son who seeks the life of a father, that just seems to be the epitome. And of course, against the commandment. Jesus spoke of such a time in Matthew 24:9 and Mark 13:12. 2 Timothy 3 speaks of times that go from bad to worse. Revelation 12:13 through the rest of that chapter, 12:13 through the rest of that chapter, speak of things going from bad to worse. So how do you handle when that happens? What David did in the face of things going from bad to worse are in this psalm as well. He went to the Lord. He didn't resort to his own power and his rights, you know, or his authority or any of that stuff to destroy his son. Rather, he fled and turned the whole matter of his safety over to the Lord. It was also interesting to me that in some other places you can see that prayer. As Nathan had predicted, the sword would remain in David's house, but David could pray with confidence regardless for the Lord to deliver him. And so he slept. This is what the text says in Psalm 3. He slept. This was a sign to him that God would deliver him from his enemies, even though he was still in danger. That's kind of weird, isn't it? Most people can't sleep when your whole world's coming apart. David slept. He actually trusted God. I think that's what the picture is supposed to be, that is being communicated to us. So David exudes confidence in God as he says salvation belongs to the Lord in Psalm 3. he speaks as if his enemies are already smitten. You know, that part about smiting them on the cheek and their teeth being shattered. David was forced to flee from the city from his murderous son, who only a few years earlier had fled from David after killing his half-brother. Though the rebellion was widespread, the Lord thwarted Absalom's counselors, crushed his enemies, and eventually restored David to power. Well, what should we do in the face of things going from bad to worse? Only a believer can have this kind of confidence in God, even though all of that is happening everywhere you would look. Any other would have that lingering doubt, you know, and not be able to sleep. Listen to Job in the face of his situation going from bad to worse with no end in sight. Though he slay me, I will hope in him. Job 13:15. 19:25 of Job says, as for me, I know that my Redeemer lives, and at the last he will take his stand on the earth, even after my skin is destroyed. So again, we come back to this familiar refrain, trust in the promises of God. Trust in God. If you know him and he knows you, there's no power on earth or in the universe that can sever that. How many times can they kill you, after all, when you're already dead? Now, I'm not talking about being physically dead, but being dead to self. John Wycliffe had his bones dug up and burned again. Can you imagine that? What were those people thinking? They actually dug up his grave and pulled out his skeleton and burned his bones again. What's the point? Insult to injury, right? As John Fox said in his Book of Martyrs, though they digged up his body, burnt his bones, and drowned his ashes, yet the word of God and the truth of his doctrine, with the fruit and success thereof, they could not burn. Which yet to this day doth remain. End of the quote. If you don't know him, things will go from bad to worse, and they'll even go from worse to worse yet. My counsel is for all to trust in the promises, of course, and to trust in the Lord. But it will take entering into a relationship with him first. And that's always the right course, regardless of how things are going in your life. Well, that's enough for today. Until we see each other or speak, or the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace, which is the word for shalom, as you well know. The Lord give you shalom, wellness in every single aspect of life.